Blog Talk Radio.
Our lives to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we want that fight to land on the line.
College basketball fans, the College Ball Show podcast is back. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to break down everything that is college basketball. Of course, per usual, we'll start the show with recap from the last handful of days. We'll probably sneak back real quick for North Carolina and Duke. I know my co-host may not want to cover that subject, but we will. And also a big win by UCLA coming all the way back, finishing very strong against Oregon. We know Oregon had that back-to-back, those back-to-back games that were really, really tough, having to face Arizona, even though they performed phenomenally in that game, and then having to go on the road and take on UCLA. I mean, they almost won the game, really. That was a very, very good game. So we'll start with recap from the weekend as well. You know, we've had all these crazy upsets. Six out of the top 10 two Saturdays ago. Four of them were to, non-ranked teams. Just a ton of matchups, you know what I mean? That looked like, okay, that should be a win. Oh, upset. Ton of upsets within the top 25 and especially within the top 10. It seems like the last month of Saturdays has been like that. Well, last Saturday wasn't the case. There wasn't any really major upsets per se. I mean, there was a couple, don't get me wrong. But there was nothing that stood way, way, way out. So we'll start with recap, of course. Then we'll instead of going right to predictions, because we got, you know, Kansas, man, they got a busy week again. They got to take on West Virginia in Baylor within the next, 5-6 days. So we'll definitely look forward to, you know, previewing and predicting and all that. But before we do that, we're going to go over the sneak peek that was released yesterday, right? The sneak peek, the selection committee decided this year that they're going to do the top 16 teams. So basically the top four in each region, right? So it's a month before Selection Sunday. They decided, you know what, we're going to give you a sneak peek. We're going to give you where we'd – if college basketball, the regular season, and all the – you know, obviously we have the conference tournaments still, the league play in the tournaments and all that. But if it were to end today, this is where the top four seeds would be. So it's they're calling it the sneak peek for selection committee top 16. We'll go over that. It's a month before Selection Sunday, like I said. Couple of surprises, a couple of teams that didn't make it in, surprising, right? I think Wisconsin and a couple other teams that got mentioned there, Purdue as well. But there are some teams that got mentioned, but maybe there's some debate on where they're at in the top 16, in which region they're top four in, and we get a look at the top seeds and whatnot. So we'll definitely banter back and forth with some of that, get our take on that. We forgot to mention that last week that they were going to do that. But I remember, I don't know, like a month ago, them talking about that. And obviously they're piggybacking off college football. You know, we love it that college football waits to do their rankings later in the season, but then it's week by week, and it really drums up business, per se, and hype, and just talk about the sport the last 5 weeks, 6 weeks, right? So I think it's a smart move. I like that they're just opening up the books, per se, saying, hey, here we go. I see that my co-host has joined me now as well. So we're going to get into recap. Like I said, we're going to go back and forth and debate those top 16 seeds, the sneak peek, and then, of course, we'll get into previewing the week and weekend and all the predictions. Like I said, Kansas, man, they are really – we talked about they're going to be on a stretch of games, but it just doesn't stop with Kansas. And some other teams that are really – Virginia's got a big week. They still have to play North Carolina twice. They're playing Duke as well. So the ACC is wide open. A couple other conferences are starting to tighten up. Some of them you look and go, well, like it kind of looks like Nova's got it. The SEC is wide open. So we're definitely getting into it. And if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show podcast, remember you can listen to us. It's a college football and college basketball show. So we'll go all the way to the national title game. And, of course, it's the College Ball Show with basketball now. So we will – you know, stay with us for the NBA playoffs. We'll take it on a weekly basis just like we do this show. We'll cover the NBA playoffs all the way to the title game, the finals, right? And, of course, we'll cover the draft and free agency. It literally goes on a weekly basis all the way till early July with free agency. So keep that in mind. You can subscribe on iTunes under Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. Let's get into this, though, because we had ourselves, like I said, a kind of a ho-hum weekend, per se, especially if you include what kind of weekends we had had prior, like I mentioned on Saturday. We had so many frickin' upsets the last handful of Saturday. So I wouldn't say uneventful in an upset way, but we still had a lot of tight games that came all the way down to the wire. Kansas escape with a win when their best player didn't have his best game. He had the flu and whatnot and just shot pretty bad. My Minnesota Gophers are on a streak 3 in a row now. You know, they had that hot streak, then they lost 5 in a row. Now they won 3 in a row. They're up to 18 wins. It's looking pretty good. It's looking pretty good. But before we get into that, like I said, we'll talk about yesterday. There were some good games. Saturday, you know, Virginia Tech in a phenomenal double overtime game. We'll have to talk about that. But before we get to Saturday and Sunday and get to previewing and all that and these selection seeds, the sneak peek and all that, I think we should, for two games, we should sneak back into back into last week. And, of course, my friend, we got to start with it. North Kakalaka goes down swinging to the Dukies. And then we'll also talk UCLA in Oregon after that. That was a tremendous comeback and a close to a game by UCLA. They really showed their potential. Finally played up to their potential against the good teams. We know they got the talent. We know it's young. But we also know that if you look at the some quality teams, I should say, in the Pac-12, they haven't played that good against them. They haven't played up to their ability, and I feel like, especially the way they closed, they definitely played up to their ability, and that really just, instead of Oregon taking a commanding lead, now that's wide open as well. Maybe not that wide open, because, you know, you did have UCLA. I think they have 3 losses in conference. Is that true? 3 or 4? Can't remember. But anyway, let's go back to last Thursday, Marshall. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host. What's going on, buddy? How you doing anyway? You doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing not too bad. I finally had a weekend of lack of stress, and I got a lot of sleep. So I can't complain too much, buddy. I'm doing pretty good.
Well, that's a good combination. Lack of stress in sleep, man. That people just,
yeah,
you know, thrive for that. It's like, oh, I'm recharged. You know, I'm all recharged. How's the tennis? And you know, it's warm enough to play tennis up here, dude. We're up in the 40s somehow. Next Monday, it's going to be like 55. this winter has been just backwards. It's raining now more than it's snowing this year. I don't know if that's a trend of things to come. We won't make this a political show, but the writing is on the wall when it comes to that, it seems like. But how's tennis going so far? You had your first day today, right? Is that true?
Yeah. I found out today that I don't think my tennis kids truly understand the meaning of, like, running. And I had, you know, the main tennis coach was gone today, so I told him just to split up and play singles and doubles matches. And a lot of the girls decided to maybe lay on the tennis court and text friends while they were supposed to be practicing their games. So I think I'll have to maybe come down a little tough on them because, you know, this whole laying around, sitting down. Now, I get tennis is a different sport, buddy, but it seems to be a different mentality of a little more laid-backness, which, you know, after coaching football and basketball, I'm not about to let kids text on the ground during practice. So it's a little bit of a change of pace, but tennis is good, and it's also kind of fun to play. It's a great workout for the sport anyway, so we'll see.
Because, you know, you do run a lot during a tennis match. It's kind of like short wind sprints, you know what I mean? A lot of wind sprints and some of these, I mean, obviously not in high school, but some of these at the pro level, the 3 and 4 and 5, 6 hour matches are just grueling. But yeah, you gotta get them in shape. And like you said, I could see how that would be the last maybe 8 years, 10 years texting and in classes, texting and activity time, texting all the time. It must be it's a full time job just to keep track of that stuff. I'm sure of it, but. Get into the nitty-gritty. Like I said, we only want to pull two games from last week that we'll talk about it, and I think we got to start with a game that didn't necessarily go your way, buddy. But it was on the road, so when you're looking at, you know, when you're looking at the calendar, you're looking at the schedule at the beginning of the year, you go, huh, I guess that wouldn't be crazy to lose at Duke, but let's break down the game and see how that, the outcome, you know, was that exact result.
Well, being a diehard Carolina fan, Chris, it really is the same script of every Carolina loss. And that's why I'm not saying I wasn't upset, but it was like, oh, here we go again. And by here we go again, I'd like to mention the fact that, like usual, in the first half, Carolina played good. Like they normally always do at Duke. And they fed people down low, and their point guards were assertive with passing, driving, being smart all together, and hey, what do you know, we were in the game. And like usual, in the second half, what did we do that cost us a game at Duke? Bleeping again. Well, our guys who don't miss free throws missed free throws. We decided not to feed the post, because why do you want to do that when you have some of the best bigs in the front court? And our point guards decided to try to take games over, especially Nate Britt, who is probably our 7th best option as a scorer. It's just frustrating because it's the same crap every time for Carolina. When we lose at Duke, it's because we miss our free throws. In the first half, we feed the post. In the second half, we don't. And part of the reason we don't feed the post in the second half is because our point guards get big heads. They take stupid shots, and we lose the game. That exact formula is what has lost us 3 of our last 4 games at Duke, at least. So when I saw it play out, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. It's just the same story. And I mean this with sincerity because it doesn't matter who the rosters have been. The same thing happened with Paige, who was our point guard last year. It's just, I don't know what it is. Hey, we're crushing Duke down low. This is good. We're playing good defense. And in the second half, the point guards are like, nah, it's my turn to shine. No, dude, Nate Britt, you're not the go-to scorer on the team. So what are you doing jacking up shots when – it's on our offense. And Barry, dude's like a 92% free throw shooter. He yips at the free throw line. Oh, and by the way, let's not feed our bigs. I'm done. It's just sickening because it's the same way we lose every time. And I've said it, and that's my point, but it's like, oh, really? All right, I've seen it before, and that's how we lose it, and that's my take on the game. I mean, they played good. It wasn't embarrassing, but it's the same old crap every time we lose, and that's that. What was your take on the game, my friend?
You know, I look at the outside shooting, both teams shot a high percent. In fact, 52.5 and 52.6. So, I mean, that tells you both guys were, or both teams are shooting. Obviously, when I look at the three-point line, obviously that was huge. 13 threes compared to four, and then pretty poor shooting from the free throw line. Both teams got, you know, 18 and 16, so they were right around each other when it comes to that. I thought they played pretty good in the first half. I thought it was a well-played game. I mean, giving up 40, I wouldn't call it a defensive masterpiece. But then again, if you gave up 32, that would have been considered a good half, you know what I mean, of defensive, you know, basketball as well. But I thought it was well-played for the most part. Is Meek always your starting guy this year? Is he coming off the bench and had to start? Wasn't there somebody banged up or something like that? Or am I just I've smoked too much crack?
They normally go with Meeks and Hicks for starting bigs, but
okay, Hicks it was Hicks. That's what it was. Okay,
but Hicks was hurt with a bum ankle, and that's actually kind of a. If this was more of a Carolina-based podcast, I actually think May should start over Hicks, which I'm sure is very puts me in a minority quite strongly, but. Just when I watch them play, I really appreciate the game that May has. And I get that that's probably not going to change, but I really like the way May plays. And I honestly think he should start games over Hicks. And I hope he's kind of our X factor, because I think he is kind of our sixth man, per se, because the guy can shoot very well for a big. He's a great rebounder. But that's just kind of a side note. But, yes, Hicks was out with kind of a bum foot. And that did adjust our big rotation slightly. And most people would say that Hicks is probably our best low post big or consider our best big. So I kind of have a different opinion on him and May. But overall, we were missing one of our better players. Yes, Chris.
So as far as feeding the bigs, you still could feed the bigs. It's not like he's your only
absolutely.
Big anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have
and they have experience. Yeah,
mm-hmm,
definitely. Because
mm-hmm.
you're looking at Meeks that, you know, played 27 minutes, didn't have a bunch of personal fouls or anything, only had 9 and 5, only took 7 shots. Jackson played pretty well. Williams was like a non-like player. What the hell happened to him? He had 2 rebounds, no blocks, no steals, no turnovers, no fouls. He only shot once. What does Williams do on your team?
He normally just hits threes in momentum and, like, during big rushes. He's a good three-point shooter.
I was going to say he's a good defender, but that's not
– yeah.
I doubt that's true.
And he kind of is a defensive guy, but he normally will just hit, like,
okay.
2 or 3 threes a game, and that's kind of his MO for the squad.
Sure. Okay. So you didn't have that out of him, but that didn't mean everything. Obviously, Grayson Allen played pretty damn good. Got the 25 points, 7 of 12 from 12 three-pointers, man. That's a lot. But
I don't
seven,
believe
that
tripped anyone either. I didn't see any trips.
Well, May, let's not – I have to rewatch the game because he may be just
true.
Getting better at it. He could be just getting better at it. You know what I mean?
true, very true.
You know, I heard somebody say – no matter what you want, I think he was listening to another podcast. I think it was the CBS Sports podcast earlier today, and they said, whatever you kind of need in that game, Tatum kind of gives it to you. Whether it's, I'll score for you a little bit, I'll also get down and dirty. You know, and I thought he, although Allen and Kennard, they led the team in scoring, he had 19, but he also had 9 boards and didn't shoot phenomenally, that's for sure. But he had 5 assists as well. So I think that was key. I thought Tatum played very well. And he's a guy that, for me, just keeps going up. He also had 2 blocks as well. So overall, I think they just closed better because it's not like one team completely separated themselves by 15 or 17 and North Carolina, you know, snuck in or like North Carolina had a huge lead and they gave it up or anything like that. It was just, to me, it was a fairly well-played game. A rivalry game, which is not a big surprise on the road that North Carolina lost, but you're right. They just they could score. They got to 78, so it's not like they didn't score either. But that it does kind of seem like that theme will stick until they do something about it. Now the other marquee game, we know Oregon just shellacked, just put a butt whooping on Arizona about what, 4 days prior, 5 days prior to this game last Thursday, UCLA, Oregon, and UCLA finally showed up in a big game near the end as well. I thought they played good in spurts against Arizona earlier in the season, but you know, we know their talent. We've talked about it plenty of times, but it does seem like some of their youth and lack of cohesiveness playing together. They do have some veterans, it should be said, but the way they closed that game, the run that they made, Marshall, was very, very impressive. And, you know, I don't know if I look at it really that negatively per se, like, oh man, Oregon just looked like crap. You know, I don't think it was that. I just think UCLA, the way they closed, they got so freaking hot. And you could see what's-his-toes ball, really, the second half. I mean, 15 points, 11 boards. Didn't really shoot the ball well early, but closed well. He hit that big three. You know, he's got that. That ball has that. And we can get into his brother with the 92 points or whatever as well. But he's got, like, an interesting release where – it's almost like the ball is a little closer to his chest, but he kind of snaps it off. I don't know what it is, but it's a really weird release, but it's smooth, though. You know, it's not like – I wouldn't say it's completely fundamental because his arm doesn't necessarily – I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain on radio, you know, on the podcast, but it's kind of like when he cocks the ball back, it's closer to his chest more than it is being straight out and to the right of you if you're a right-hand shooter. He still has a good follow-through and all that, but the way he came down and did that step-back three, Marshall, he just kind of snapped it off. He's got a really interesting shooting style to him, technique that he does, but he really came alive. And overall, the way they closed that game, it was very impressive, and they finally played defense for a chunk of time because that's one of the things too. In fact, Marshall, you can kind of make, you know, I'm not going to say they mirror themselves, but you can definitely make some, you know, you can see some similarities to that North Carolina team. A ton of offense, but man, are you going to defend somebody? That is a problem because, I mean, you still had Oregon. You know, they didn't shoot great, but they did hit 12 threes. The thing is, they took 33 of them. You know, that's sure an issue. Whereas UCLA, sure, they still took 24, but overall they shot 50% from the field, almost 51%. Neither side really got to the line a lot. But I think it was just a good team effort, a good wide variety of scoring. You had four out of the five starting guys in double figures, and then he had – a 9-point effort, and Holiday came off, hit some big, big shots down the stretch with 15 as well. What was your take about that game, man? Because, like I said, it was just nice to see UCLA play up to their potential, especially when they literally had to really rally back. I mean, they were, what was it, with 5 minutes left, Oregon scored 14 points in 5 minutes to start the second half. They trailed by 19 at one point. But they stormed back. Like I mentioned, Holiday hit that big three to give them their first lead in a long, long time. They ended up getting it done 82-79. And like I said, lived up to their potential. Lonzo Ball had a great second half. What was your take with that, man?
I mean, there's kind of a certain swagger that him and his brother and his other brother have. And they do kind of, like you said, have that different kind of shot release. When you hit that dagger three from about like 35 feet out, you know, there's not a lack of confidence in that family. But with that being said, I mean, they definitely have the basketball skills to back it up. I'm not quite sure if they'll maybe have that dancing-ness side of them when they get to the NBA, per se. But overall, the question for UCLA, Chris, is can they actually – and this is kind of just a question from their overall last decade or two of they seem to be another UCLA team that has a boatload of talent. But – can they turn into be actually becoming a true team? You know, I mean, there's a way that somehow that, you know, Westbrook and Afala, or excuse me, Collison and Kevin Love didn't go to a championship game. And I think we're kind of getting that recipe again of, okay, you have Alford, the coach's son, who for all we know is a pretty good three-point shooter and a highly above average free throw shooter. And he's a good point guard. He's a senior. Ball is probably one of the more overall talented guards in basketball. He kind of has that swaggy P factor to him. He kind of has personality, and he probably does play better defense than Swaggy P does for the Lakers in the NBA. So, I mean, they have a team with a bunch of athletes. And I remember last year there was games I'd watch for UCLA. It's like, man, I got to bet on them because, man, there's no way they should lose to a team like Oregon State. But then you see them play maybe what you consider actually more of just a true team, Chris, that can't match them for talent on the court, but they sure play together more as one. So I think we're just kind of back into this UCLA mold of, okay, this is a very talented squad they have, and on paper, their guys are probably better than yours, but can they piece together, you know, honestly, a truly actual team instead of a bunch of just talented dudes that play together but never make it deeper on the tournament? I mean, the last time that
I wouldn't say deep run, because they made the Final Four three straight times, so that's a pretty deep run, but I know what you're saying.
But you know, true. But yeah, but you know, it's just like we're kind of getting that same idea of, man, UCLA, what on some games, like, man, these guys can play with anyone in the country. And some games you're like, huh, you know, what – where's this team consistency that you need if you do want to be a legit contender? But overall, obviously to come back from that much is huge. Obviously at home, that task is much, much easier than on the road. And maybe, just maybe, the luck ran out for Oregon a little bit. They had basically played three halves of incredible basketball. And it just slowly, it's like, you know, and it's not like we're taking a big shot at them. It's like, dude, you know, you've played 60 minutes of incredible basketball, and the momentum ran away from them a little bit. As you mentioned, UCLA basically gave them the best punch they could throw, and they snuck back into the game, and with momentum, they kind of took it over. But for Oregon, it's like, yeah, you lost, and obviously it was a loss that you look back on your year and like, damn, we actually could have won that freaking game. But overall, for them, it's like, well, holy cow, can you really play 80 minutes of great basketball? Like, 60 was pretty good enough. But, unfortunately, I only caught a little bit towards the end of that game because I had potentially what was supposed to be a great day, because my A kids and B kids played their final games of the year, and I came home to watch Carolina Duke. And sadly, I went 0-3 because my Tar Heels lost, my beloved A team lost, and my B team, Chris, who had a bunch of, like I said, their James Hardens, where they'd fight with each other and always want to shoot, take their own shot. They were down 17 points.
Well, that was the James Harding of the past. The new James Harding this year is a little different.
Well, my boys were down 17. I was like, okay, well, the offense isn't working that well, but we need to press to make up for time and space and all that stuff. And my kids, God bless them, we lost by 2. We cut a 17-point loss down to 2 points with 10 seconds to go. We stole the inbounds pass. We had the ball on the 3-point line, like on our end of the court, and a kid traveled, and that was that. But it was such a weird moment, too, as a coach, because that is the best they've played all year. And from one standpoint as a coach, I was like, man, I'm so happy for these kids to actually put together what was a miraculous comeback. But then I had the kids who normally goof around in practice and kind of dog in the games all crying, because you could tell they're so heartbroken from the loss itself, from coming so far from behind and then losing in the last second. So it was a very positive way for them to see, man, if we play together, we actually are quite a talented team. But they still lost by 2 points. So it was a very weird emotion as a coach because I'm like, man, what you guys just did was incredible. I'm happy you're into that way, but you're also not super happy because the kids lost. So it was quite an evening then to come home and see Carolina lose. But so overall, I was kind of emotionally drained from all my games and Carolina, so I didn't watch UCLA as much as you did, obviously. But, again, it just kind of does sound like the same script of UCLA has a lot of talent. They got Lonzo Ball, who's the guy that can basically who many people project to be the second overall pick in the draft this year behind Markelle Fultz from Washington, who's kind of a dude chilling up there alone by himself, who's probably the best player in the country. You just don't know about it because his team sucks. But, again, a lot of positives, Chris. And, you know, again, making a deep run is definitely a possibility for them. And Oregon, you just kind of, I mean, dude, you kind of ran out of gas a little bit. But, again,
yeah,
that was a close game with like, under a minute to go. So, not really a shameful loss whatsoever at all. And, again, they protect their home turf, and they still have the longest home streak in the country now due to Kansas losing. So, not the world didn't come to an end with that loss, but as you mentioned, it does make the Pac-12 race a little tighter.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not really ready to go all the way saying it's just another UCLA team because I think this is a brand new thing. I don't think it's a different coach than it was then. This is their first year. They don't have two studs. Actually, they had four. They had Collison and they had that dude who still plays the big. I can't remember his name now. But they had four pros in their starting lineup on that team that didn't win the national title game in what was it, 08 or 07. So I don't really want to go, it's the same old story, because it isn't. You know, it's brand new. They do have a top, like you said, 2-3 guy. So, you know, Westbrook, I guess you could say, is right around there. Of course, he didn't have as much hype. He was coming off the bench. But still, you could see, like, wow, this guy can play. But I don't know if I'd go there just because it's a fresh set of players, and they had some guys like Carlson was considered a player that, you know, had been more there than just a year. And I don't know. I wouldn't go there because I think that team's more talented than this team. I guess that's what I'm saying. But I did agree with a bunch of other stuff you said, and it was a good game though, and hell of a. Maybe that's what gets them over the hump. Like, okay, we got that confidence now. We know even if we're down, we can rally. But we'll see as far as the defensive end. Like I was mentioning, we're gonna get to Saturday and Sunday, then the selection stuff, and then we'll break down, some of the big match. Some of the big matchups. But I'll tell you what, you know, Saturday, it really, the Sunday was actually where all the upsets were. On Saturday, Gonzaga, although it was a closer game with St. Mary's, still not much of a competition when the thing finally got to the last couple minutes per se, but a competitive game pretty much throughout after that. Nova handled Xavier. KU barely got by on the road at Texas Tech. Like I mentioned, they did have a 6-star in that one, but they got it done either way. A couple of the upsets that are worth mentioning, though, is Notre Dame finally. They were much like Minnesota there. 4 in a row they had lost. Now, who they lost to was, I believe, Florida State was one of them, but they lost to some quality teams. I think Duke got off their little schneid. You know, of their little 2 out of 4 or 3 out of 4 or whatever they were losing. So that was a big win for Notre Dame. And it doesn't hurt Florida State that much. It was on the road after all. And also, what was the other game I was going to mention that was an upset on Saturday? I don't even know if it's really that. Butler. Butler had played better, and they got beat by Providence. I think Providence probably had their best overall game. But come Sunday, yesterday, there was some good ball, man. Wisconsin fell to Northwestern. Northwestern is going to make the tournament. That is a fact.
That's a legit squad.
66-59. They did it in the Kohl Center, which we know is not an easy place. This is a game we highlighted a little bit. We didn't get into crazy detail, But Cincinnati and SMU, I really kind of wanted to see. This is maybe one of the bigger AAC matchups of the year thus far. Cincinnati didn't really look that good, to be honest with you. They couldn't score points in the second half at all. They were held to 23 points, whereas SMU look long, lanky. They look like they're kind of a hard-nosed team. Not really a surprise considering who built them. They pulled the upset 60-51 over Cincinnati, who at that time was ranked 11th. And then a phenomenal game, really fun game with Virginia Tech and Virginia, in-state rivalry sparking up. It's not really a rivalry on the court, but it sure was during that game. And Virginia Tech starting to bounce back. They had a nice little run a couple years back with what's-his-toes, but double overtime, they get it done 80-78. It seemed like every time they made it, they needed a big three, they got it. It seemed like they just kept hitting those shots to force an overtime. Like I said, a well-played game. Parentes had a good game scoring, but only had three assists. Shot, I think, too much from the outside. I mean, 3 of 22. 42%. You know, they shoot like 49 or 50% Virginia as a team. So that clearly was an issue, I thought. And also, I think it was Allen. Allen came out the bench and scored I think he led the team. Yeah, 20 points. Allen came off hitting big shots. It was very kind of a spread offense. They also got 11 points from Lede off the bench, now that I'm looking at the box score here. But that was a big win. And in Virginia, they have a tough slay of games coming up. North Carolina twice before it's all said and done, and Duke as well. So that's going to be interesting. Any takes from Saturday and Sunday action? Like I said, Sunday seemed like the upset day rather than what it's been, which has been Saturday, just a ton of upsets, man.
Yeah, I did watch the Florida State game, Chris, with Notre Dame, and I just thought Florida State kind of had a lackluster day. You know, sometimes in basketball, you just never really get into that flow. You know, it you can't really describe it, but you watch your team play and you're like, man, there's no rhythm, or they can't make any shots, or the defense isn't there, or one of your star players is cold. And you just kind of had that feeling for Florida State where they were down like 3 or 4 points in the first half, but kind of felt like 10. And I know, like, they start off the game shooting, like, 3 of 12 from the free throw line. You're like, ugh. So it just wasn't exactly their day. And then in the second half, when it could have come down to, like, you know, I believe they were down 7 at half, when it could have made a run to force it back, it just went the other way. So, as you mentioned, a needed game for Notre Dame, because they are a team that I would say, if they were to play again, I would heavily bet Florida State. Notre Dame really has no down-low game whatsoever, which has kind of been their MO of late, and their defense is pretty lackluster. But for that game alone, you got to give them credit that they came out to play. Florida State was maybe sleepwalking a little bit. Notre Dame hit their threes, and they had the crowd. And like you said, when you go like 3 of 12 from the free throw line, sometimes you just kind of know that maybe the game's not going to be on your side, Chris. So. A big win, because Notre Dame is clearly probably on pace to be a tournament team. I would say probably in like the 7 to 10-ish range. But when you are kind of that team that is in the bubble area of where you're going to be seated, having a win like that on your resume is respectable, because Florida State is currently, I believe, a top 16 squad. So I guess your Notre Dame, screw it, whether Florida State was cold or not. We just notched a win on our belt that we needed really badly against a team that's highly respectable. So that wasn't a bad idea for them. Now, as you mentioned yesterday, Chris, for Wisconsin, that's not an easy place to win whatsoever. We've known that, because whether I've been cheering for the Badgers in the game or you've been cheering for the Gophers or whatever, we know Big Ten basketball. And the simple fact is teams don't win there much often. We give a lot of praise to Kansas for having a marvelous home record under Bill Self. I'm not saying the Badgers can match K Kansas's win-loss record over the past decade, but if you put up the numbers, they probably would be respectable. You wouldn't be laughed out the gym. Now, I realize Kansas had won like 51 straight in a row at home or 54, and Wisconsin can't quite match that, buddy, but it's pretty respectable. And to watch them play last night, I was truly amazed that going into the game that Northwestern was like an 11-point underdog. Now, I get that the Badgers are having a good year, and as I just said, I know the Kohl Center is a tough place to win at. But when I saw 11, I was like, huh, either Vegas is really giving Wisconsin props, or maybe they're still not on that train of Northwestern being a good squad contending team. Because every time you and I have mentioned Northwestern this year, Chris, it's been a positive thing. It's like they're finally getting over the hump. This is a legit squad. I've not seen them get embarrassed. They have a very good win-loss record. They're almost won 20 games this year. I mean, everything is going good. So I saw the points for him. I'm like, dude, you got to be kidding me. Like, I would never bet against the Badgers, but I sure as heck wouldn't take Northwestern as an 11-point, you know, dog and look at that with a serious face. And from the get-go, the Badgers just never really had control of the game. I had it on when I was watching another show of mine, and every time I looked, it was like, oh, Wisconsin's down 7. They cut down to 4. Oh, Northwestern up 10. In the second half, to come out of half, Wisconsin went on a 5-0 run. They went from being down 8 to down 3. And what do you know, next time I look back at my television, Northwestern back up 10. And it was just an incredible performance, probably one of the best wins you can write up for any team in the country almost. I just gave credit to Notre Dame.
Especially for
Northwestern. Having a notch on,
I mean, that's got to be one of their best victories in a long time.
Yeah, I just gave credit to Notre Dame for having to win on their belt, you know, beating Florida State, which, you know, it was at home. But, hey, Florida State maybe is cold that night, but you got the win. I would multiply that even more because you went into Wisconsin on the road, and basically it was never a game. I really did think that, okay, Wisconsin might win by a bucket here near the buzzer. They're not going to flip the table and completely run Northwestern out the gym. But God, golly, as Randy Moss would say, they never let it go. With under 10 minutes to go, that basically it stayed a 7-8-point game the whole game. And it's not impossible to believe that Wisconsin lost, but for them not to make a run in the second half and take the lead back that I don't recall ever seeing whatsoever, it really was surprising. And I think, you know, knock on wood, barring injuries happen or anything crazy, this is a legit squad for a team that's really looking, Chris, to get out of that mold and end the streak. Like, dude, you went into Madison and beat who's probably a top 12 team in the country, and it wasn't even really
a
game.
No, they're not in the top 16. They're not in the top 16. We'll talk about that.
True, fair. But you housed a good team in a place where they normally don't lose, period, let alone not lose. I mean, it was just, Chris, one of the best ones I've seen all year, period. And I haven't even watched Northwestern basketball that much this year, especially compared to Wisconsin. I try to watch on a somewhat regular basis, but it doesn't even matter. The Badgers were healthy. You walked into the Kohl Center, and you never let them get the lead back. It was just phenomenal win. I just got to say, they're on their way to being not just a bubble team, to being a – dude, you're looking at maybe like a 4-5 seed. You're in that area of being respectable where you won't have to go through the gauntlet of being a 7 or 8 to have to play a 1 seed your first game. But just an impressive win, and as you mentioned, probably the best win that they've had in Northwestern basketball since you and I have been doing our basketball show. And this is, I believe, year 6 or year 7. So, I mean, and you could probably go back further, but the best win you've had in about 7 years, how can't you build momentum off such a great win for the program, my friend?
That's very true. And it's something – minorly anyway, we've been tracking, you know, following this team minorly and just kind of looking at it and saying, hey, this might be the year. And I don't know how they wouldn't get in there. Just to kind of keep you posted, we have and you know, for the listeners right now, Louisville, Syracuse at half, 29-25. That should be a good way to close. Syracuse is actually starting to play better basketball. They got a game winner against Clemson. It was a 3-pointer not long ago. That was a nice shot in the corner, wide open, passed the ball right. That was a good game. That came down to the wire. Obviously, they needed, you know, three to get it done. But right now, actually, they just went up. Texas Tech with a 1:57 left in the first, 31-37 at Texas Tech. Baylor, Kansas just escaped barely in Texas Tech. So I'm going to definitely DVR the second half of that one because I obviously already have the West Virginia and KU, you know, recorded and whatnot. Go ahead.
Let me ask you one question before we move on to the top 16 and all that stuff. What am I supposed to think about Florida? They continue to move up the brackets or of the rankings. They have a respectable record, but I haven't seen them play. I'm like, are they really that good, or are they just taking advantage of a conference who, you know, obviously Kentucky always goes through growing pains and gets better at the end of the year with Calipari, and you always think, well, man, here we go. Have you seen Florida play? And if you have, Chris, what is your thoughts been on them? Because every time I check, they keep winning. They have big blowout wins, and they keep climbing up the national rankings. What are your thoughts on the Gators, and are they a team that is benefiting from maybe an easy schedule slightly per se, or you maybe think that they're a legit squad that's working their way up to be becoming even more respectable?
Well, actually, I think it was either last show or maybe two shows ago by now. But I did
– okay.
We did kind of cover them a fair amount as far as – because they had started to kind of turn the tide, you know, to me. And when they got that big win, actually they handled Kentucky fairly easily in that second half. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. Kentucky started banging back in a little bit, but then they cleared it out and just – 88-66, actually. I'm looking at it right now. They did beat Oklahoma, who was down this year. They lost to South Carolina, 57-53. Another loss to Vandy. So they started the SEC kind of rough. They started out, well, I guess not really, because they had I didn't back up far enough. They started out really well. They beat a good squad on the road with their with Arkansas. Tennessee's a decent team, right? We've seen them mm-hmm. battle with a couple of people. Bama just got an upset not too long ago over South Carolina. And then they hit a little rough spot. They lost on the road to South Carolina. That was kind of South Carolina's coming out party where they go, we're actually on top. Then they got beat. And then, you know, now we see it's a little bit different. But judging by, like, looking at their non-conference stuff, they lost to Gonzaga. Not a big, you know, not a big problem. They did beat Miami. That's pretty good. They lost 84-74 to Duke and 83-78 in back-to-back games against Duke and Florida State. So I think maybe they had they went against some competition. Some of it they did well against. Some of it Seton Hall's an okay team. They won there. I think they're just, yeah, I think they're figuring themselves out. You know, like I said, I'm not going to get much more detail because I did kind of – it was kind of a wait and see, and I think we're still in that. I don't think anything's happened out of that holding pattern, let's put it that way.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, they're just kind of those one teams where, you know, we do our shows and it's like, man, I wish I could see this team play. But it's like, well, crap, I've missed them or I haven't been able to watch their game, so – my goal this week will try to be to watch Florida a little bit just because I really have not even a gut feeling of, like, well, they're winning good, and so I might as well try to get a glimpse, because even watching one or two games kind of get a feeling for a squad, and that's one of those teams where I got to put on, like, my to-do list for our show of, like, all right.
Florida, and it kind of matters who they're playing, too, you know, because sometimes you can be fooled. Right now, though, there's a three-way tie. That's something in the last 2 weeks that has come about. Kentucky was actually tied for third place not long ago, where South Carolina only had one loss. Now all three of them are tied 10-2, 10-2, and they're all at 10-2. Kentucky, you know, did beat South Carolina. South Carolina beat Florida, and Florida beat Kentucky. So they've all kind of beat up on each other. Arkansas is a pretty good club, sitting at 7-5. 18-7 overall, much like the Gophers. Actually, the Gophers beat them in the non-conference. Then it is kind of like, some ho-hum type 6-6. Not, there's nothing really that stands out beyond that. It's not the deepest conference. But the fact that there's two teams battling with Kentucky tells me there's at least life in the SEC, that's for sure. And remember, not long ago, was it 2 years ago, that all of a sudden some squads from the SEC started doing some damage in the we kind of overlooked them. In fact, I remember in our preview show, we didn't even bring up the SEC a couple years back,
no.
And they ended up being a little
right.
bit better. So kind of wait and see, but we got a three-way race up there. Let's keep this thing moving, though. Let's keep this thing moving, okay? Because
well,
obviously,
at least they're not Big 12 football, Chris, because there's a three-way tie in the Big 12 football. I think, like, Kentucky might have to go to the NIT, and, like, Florida might go to, like, you know, the second round with a bye, and, you know, who knows what would happen if that was Big 12 basketball. You know, they would just – some team would probably miss the tournament for how we know with how they do things in the Big 12 for ties at the top of the conference. Thankfully, the SEC is a little more organized.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, before we break it down, right, so the sneak peek, they're calling it the sneak peek, the selection committee an exact month before Selection Sunday, as we know
sure.
it's called, they put out a sneak peek. It's basically the top 16 seeds. They put them in, you know, four different regions like they do, and they just said here, right now, if we ended today, we know there's plenty of big games. Just ask Virginia. Just ask Kansas. There's a lot of big games. Just ask North Carolina. I mean, there's a lot of big games left to decide even the actual conference. And then we get to the conference tourney where you can make a big run. But as far as today, and we always say that anyway when we're talking about this stuff. A lot of times it's college football because it's week to week and you only have – one day of all, most of the games being on there. But as far as the release goes, what are your thoughts about the release itself? Obviously, they're piggybacking off of November being extra pumped up and hyped up in the buzz, whether it's negative or positive. It really helps that push run, that stretch run to the end of the season for college football. This is a little bit different because they're not going to keep putting it out weekly. But what are your thoughts a month ahead saying, hey, not necessarily your thoughts on the actual stuff. You can get into that, you know, as we name them. But what are your thoughts overall, you know, them kind of trying to a test run, so to speak, in releasing these seeds early? It's kind of a different run, and obviously, like I said, they're looking to get some piggyback action off of college football.
I just honestly, Chris, I guess my overall just instant gut feeling is, do we really need it? I mean, in 25 days or 24 days, you have Selection Sunday, which is one of the days of all of sports, where I get to know where I'm going on my trip to Orlando this year. You get normally only two or three teams that are on the bubble, but everyone else gets to see their bracket. And that day is a super fun day. And I get with college football, with there's only so few teams that can make it, and it's kind of a tighter race, and the regular season means more. Like, I get the point of it there. Even then, I think they maybe started just a week too early. But with college basketball, it's like, you know, I guess we kind of get to see inside the insight of what these guys are thinking about teams. But with that said, like, there is still a lot of games left. In college football, it's like, you know, we knew that, okay, the first ranking came out. Well, we're still probably going to see Bama and Ohio State, you know. So I guess I'm just kind of bouncing around because I guess I really don't see the point to it. I guess it's maybe cool to see where your team is currently ranked in the top clubs, but I know Carolina is going to be like a two or a three seed. And I know like Wisconsin is going to the tournament. And Kansas is probably going to be fighting for like a one or a two. And a team like, you know, Purdue is sitting like a four or five. So I guess I don't quite get the glamour. I get, as you mentioned, are trying to go kind of with the college football idea of it. But I just think with the way sports are different, and as you nicely said this year, in college football, a regular season truly matters. In college basketball, if Carolina loses to Duke to finish the year, which would suck because we'd go on two against our rivals, I'm not in fear of them missing the tournament. If Kansas goes on a two-game losing streak or Florida, as we just mentioned, loses a couple, they're still going dancing, and their seeds maybe can alternate a little. And lastly, I'll say this and throw it back to you. The college basketball committee normally does a superb job of picking the tournament. Now, we went back and forth all year about, you know, who should have been in the Final Four. I kind of changed my opinion over the last week about whether it be Washington or Penn State and all that stuff. And that was kind of a debate talking point. With college basketball, okay, maybe your team gets a 4 seed and you felt they should have been a 3, but you're still in the dance. So overall, I just don't think you have as many X factors and variables that make something like this cool, because maybe your team is a 2 seed now, but if you go and lose your next couple of games, you know for sure you're going down to a 4 or 5, but you're not missing the tournament. So I guess I just don't get maybe the draw of what they're trying to do. Besides, as you said, maybe copying the college football scheme, I just think
it is. I mean, there's no other. Nothing else tied to it. That's exactly what it is. It's.
I just don't get the draw and allure to it.
It's nice for coaches, though.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
It's nice for coaches because all the coaches in the Big Ten right now, what if they have something to go? Okay, guys, take a look at the top 16 seeds. Tell me what you see. You don't see any Big Ten team at all there. So, therefore, you got work to do. You know, I don't know. I think it helps the coaches, that's for sure. But,
I don't have to have some long segment.
I'd rather break down the actual things. I was just trying to get your initial take on it. Are you against it? Is it worthless? Or you say, well, it's ho-hum. If they do it once, it's no big deal.
I lean more towards worthless just because Selection Sunday has done so well. And again, one loss doesn't keep you out of the tournament in theory compared to football. And I'll stop there.
I like that they did it. It's just something to talk about. I like the fact that, you know, they're open, like, hey, here's what we're looking at, and it just gives you a good view of it instead of, because let's be honest, Marshall, we talk about bracketology on the show, you know what I mean? So
yes,
you know, as it's coming down to the wire, we start to talk about it. So instead of bracketology, which is pretty close to what it's going to be, this is actually the legit right now where they stand, and you can kind of see who has the more weight. Anyway, let's get to it.
Okay.
We have 4 number one seeds: Villanova, North Carolina, Arizona, and Butler. Right? Or wait, no, this is wrong. The number one seeds. I'm sorry, I read it wrong. Villanova, Kansas, Baylor, and Gonzaga. Those are the top seeds. The number two seeds: North Carolina, Florida State, Louisville, Oregon. Number three seeds: Arizona, Virginia, Florida, and Kentucky. And the number four seeds: Butler, West Virginia, UCLA, UCLA, and Duke. Now, Butler just lost. Virginia just lost. Florida State just lost. Oregon lost, but that's not going to hurt them that much. Kansas and Baylor, you know, some people think, oh, Kansas and Baylor are going to get there. Maybe the top, like the bottom half of the Big 12 doesn't really impress me. You know, I think bracketology-wise, they have 7 out of the 10 teams in, though. So it's a quality, you know, conference, of course. Some people have a problem with Baylor and Kansas both being on the top line. I think Baylor, you got to look at – a lot of people say stuff, and then they don't look at their season and their non-conference and all that. You know what I mean? They may look at, like, recent stuff. I think you kind of get lost even way more in football because, like I said, they're all on basically Saturday. Sure, we have Thursday night and Friday night every once in a while. But most of the matchups are on Saturday. It's once a week. And you close going, yeah, but this is just a better team. They're not the team they were in September and all that. But the same could be said, you know, in college basketball, no doubt about it. But the whole picture has to be taken in. They beat Oregon, okay? They beat Louisville. They beat a pretty good Xavier team. So they have some quality wins in non-conference, along with, you know, some okay wins They I'll tell you what though, they're big. You know, when they went against West Virginia and they went against Kansas, kind of shows you maybe that Big 12 is deeper than maybe even people want to, you know, admit when you start to break it down like that. But I don't have a problem with Baylor, even though in conference they've lost their two biggest games. I don't have a problem with it because look at their non-conference wins. What do you say about the number one? Just kind of breaking down the who should be there, who's not. Obviously, Wisconsin. You know, here's the deal, Marshall. Wisconsin just lost to a good club at home, but they just lost, and they already weren't in. They weren't a fourth seed. You know what I mean? So obviously, Big Ten has a lot of work to do, even more than the Big East.
Sure.
Well, the Big East has Butler in there. What are your thoughts on the number one seeds, and just in general, all of the seeds? What do you think? Someone's a little overrated. Some people think, oh, Louisville's a little overrated at this point. Some people think Florida's a little bit overrated at this point as well, although they house Kentucky, right? And Kentucky's a third seed too. So what are your thoughts here, man?
Yeah, with the Big Ten, like, you know, Wisconsin, that is a little surprising. I mean, you basically are saying that on a neutral court that Butler and Florida are, you know, miles above. The leaving Wisconsin out's a little bit surprising. I'm also just initially from looking at it, Chris, to see Kansas or to see Baylor and West Virginia have such a wide difference from each other. Now, again, I don't have their schedule in front of each other both directly, but to see Baylor be a 3 seed and West Virginia be a 14. Well, I know. But just initial reaction, it's like, okay, West Virginia did kind of kick the tar out of Baylor. And I don't know if Baylor doesn't warrant a 1 seed. You got embarrassed by K-State at home, and West Virginia kicked you out the damn gym when you were number one. So, I mean, Baylor did have a very successful spring break trip to the Bahamas to start the season with a early season tournament win, but Baylor is a 1 seed to me. I don't warrant that at all. I would gladly put Gonzaga over Baylor if we're going to go into numbers on this, because
well,
they haven't lost yet.
Baylor, who has better wins? Though they got some quality wins though too. Who should take their spot then?
I would at least move Gonzaga up, because maybe they can't.
Gonzaga's number one seed.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I would switch the 3 and 4, because in theory they even rank the ones in order too. So, Carolina.
Would you move Florida State, Louisville? They beat Oregon straight up. So you wouldn't move them above. Who would be above them? North Carolina, Florida State, Louisville, or Oregan? Like Gonzaga, okay. So you move them, so they're the fourth number one seed then. Okay, we got that accomplished. Would you put North Carolina above them?
I'm trying to think of Carolina. I mean, I think my team's great. I'm trying to think of their best win this year. I mean, they're tied for first in the best conference in the country. So... I think if you were to break it down, you can make an argument that you could have North Carolina or Florida State swap spots with Baylor and it'd be respectable. But just initially, off the top glance, I just think Baylor has a couple of losses where I'm like, I don't know if they deserve a 1 seed, no more than Carolina or Florida State, you know.
North Carolina in the non-conference lost to Kentucky and lost to Indiana and beat Wisconsin. That's what they did. So they have a loss to Indiana, who may not make the tournament. They lost to Kentucky, no, and that was a tight game, 103-100. And then they did beat Wisconsin. That Wisconsin, obviously, right now, is not rated in the top four. So I disagree. I disagree with that one.
Let's see, Baylor beat Oregon. Nice win.
I already went over who they. Yeah, I already went there.
Oh,
I'm saying
okay.
Louisville. Who'd you move over them?
I guess Yeah, that's fair.
And then Wisconsin, they lost to Creighton at full strength. Creighton, that's not a big, detrimental. They lost to North Carolina. So in those two ranked teams, they had a chance to beat them, and they didn't. They did beat Syracuse, who's coming a little bit up. They beat kind of middle-of-the-line SEC team in Tennessee, who's scrappy but not that good. They don't really have – they beat Marquette, and Marquette just beat Nova a couple weeks ago. But overall, they're still they're on the rise, but they're not that good. And then they lost to Purdue, but that was on the road. They only have two losses in conference. They just lost, and then lost to Purdue. So their best win, I guess comparing it to the other top four, I guess it's not the craziest thing to not have. I guess Wisconsin is the eye test thing, and some of that comes into this. That in program, you know, we can't live off last year or the last 10 years too, and I think that kind of plays into Wisconsin as well. Like, yeah, but they're a good club. You know what I mean? That type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think you say that perfectly right there, Chris. Yeah, well, you know, like they're going to be a team that makes a run. But, I mean, overall, again, I just you asked for initial. I'm not even thinking on paper. Just initially, my first glance was I thought Baylor's kind of high. And, I mean, overall, to have Carolina and Florida State neck and neck, I think that's completely right. I mean, they're still fighting with each other. And Louisville, I mean, all three of those teams are almost tied for first, so I really can't argue much there. Oregon, they've been trending upward since last year, so I can't really go with much there. I think my only other standpoint besides Wisconsin being off and Baylor maybe being just a spot or two high, in my opinion, would be the SEC love with Florida and Kentucky. They just kind of, again, just off glance seem a little high and steep. I mean, Florida's ranked 17th in the rankings, and I know that not when you look at the AP rankings, they don't necessarily translate into this, but Florida just moved up to 17th in the rankings. They're 11th in here. So clearly how the voters see Florida currently and how the committee sees Florida currently.
And there's like four different ranking systems too. We got the RPI, we got the, you know, we can't just go AP and just live it off that.
No. I would say that they have a substantial difference just kind of working over state. With being a six-spot difference, that just kind of makes you like, huh, like maybe Florida has some other parts of their resume that the AP doesn't necessarily always pull out and recognize, but it's worth mentioning of like, damn, they're 11th? Holy cow. Like, that says something. And lastly, is Butler really this good? We had a very fun stretch of our show where Butler was, like, a legit good a third of a ball rotation of a millisecond off of beating Duke on a buzzer beater team win for a national title. So I haven't seen or heard the stories of a Gordon Hayward on the squad, but – maybe this is a year again where Butler's like, oh, damn, you don't want to face them. Now, I haven't seen or heard that news,
okay,
but maybe there is a squad.
Let's talk. Instead of talking about their past, let's talk about right now. They beat Northwestern in the non-conference.
Okay, good win. Very good win.
They beat Arizona in the non-conference.
Okay.
They beat Cincinnati. And they beat Indiana, which, you know, we know Indiana's not that good this year, but Cincinnati's pretty good. They have some stumbles. Oh, by the way, they beat Villanova. So I don't have a problem with them being in the top four whatsoever. I'd pick them over Wisconsin when it comes to what they did on the court, you know, without bringing up past players or anything. I don't see there's a problem there.
I guess, Chris, I'll just kind of own up to it, and I guess I just kind of forgot that they had that good resume. sounded a little like, you know, got caught with my tongue, but yes, I should have done a little more research on both because I know they've been respectable, but
And the Big East is kind of strong this year, like stronger than it has been anyway. I mean, I'm not talking, yes, you know, I'm talking about the new Big East.
And with all that said, you look and they're ranked 24th. So, again, and I know there's a wide variety of dimension of facts that go into it.
You know, they just lost.
But
they just lost the game, though, didn't they? It's the AP.
They just lost to Providence.
Yeah. I mean, and they lost to Creighton, like, at the end of last month in a competitive game. So, I mean.
Creighton, Georgetown, Providence.
They just stumped,
Creighton,
that's why.
Yeah, Creighton swept them. They lost to St. John's. They lost to Indiana State. Okay, so Baylor's one of those teams that if you look at their wins, you're like, holy cow, that's a very impressive win resume. But then to cancel it out, you're like, oh, dude, like, there may be what you classify, I guess, Chris, as a hot and cold team. On a night when Butler's on, they're as good as any team in the nation.
Well, right,
I would say based off the wins you just lost.
To be in the fourth seed, clearly. I mean,
yeah,
that's probably why they're not
a
third.
I would say six losses is kind of dancing right on the edge of dropping out of that. But, again, with the wins you mentioned, yeah, that
well, I mean, they
have wins against teams that – true. Yeah, they have wins against teams that are even slightly ranked above them. So, again, yeah, that was just kind of a – but, again, overall, I'm you asked me for points, and I kind of just gave you initial gut calls, and that's what that is. But – again, with basketball, it's like, oh, it's something to debate, but it's just not quite as impactful as football. Because, again, I'll say this. I'd be shocked.
Well, then again, it's not impactful, really, the first one they put out, because every week it changes. Whereas this is going to change, but we won't know the changes. So, actually, the first one they put out is really not impactful. You know what I mean? It's the other ones that come. It's kind of interesting. But either way, let's move on. We don't have much more time.
Okay.
Let's get to tonight. In Kansas, man, they have a we've been talking about this, man. They have a hell of a run coming up. It's all going to be decided this week, in my opinion, in the Big 12, because they're playing at home, but they have to play West Virginia tonight in about an hour or so. And just to keep the listeners, the live listeners right now, 36-33 with 14:46 left in the second, Louisville, Syracuse, and Baylor's up 42-37 with 17 minutes left. That's a big game tonight, and then they got to go play Baylor. So a couple of games we're going to talk about is that game later tonight, West Virginia, Kansas. That's a big, big game. Also, your squad's got a big game coming up. We'll talk about that in a second. Duke, Virginia at Virginia. That'll be Wednesday. And then Saturday, Virginia and North Carolina have to go head up. KU, like I mentioned, at Baylor. That's a big game. I mean, there is a ton of games. That's the night game on ESPN is Virginia at UNC. And then on Sunday, you have an interesting matchup in the Big Ten, Maryland at Wisconsin, which now that at Wisconsin becomes, like, I've kind of written off the Gophers winning at Wisconsin, you know, this year, because the fact that Wisconsin just lost tells me they're going to probably win out for the rest of the year.
True.
At home.
Yeah.
That's just kind of stats and how it works. Let's talk about a couple of these matchups. What do you think is going to happen tonight? You think West Virginia is going to go into Allen Fieldhouse and just shellac them? No, I'm just kidding. What do you think about tonight's game?
That'd be nice. That,
well, I know that.
Really nice, Chris.
Well, Syracuse just took the lead, 37-38. Oh, I'm sorry. Now it's 38-37. It was just 37. Oh, wow. Anyway, go ahead. This back-and-forth game, considering it's a low score.
I think for as much credit as we give West Virginia for sweeping Kansas the last 4 years in their home turf, I think the favor gets returned, but then again, West Virginia's also been a better team on the road this year. But I just think with the inconsistency that the West Virginia style has, although it's been pretty beneficial against Kansas at home, I just don't see them winning Kansas. I mean, long story short, as you just mentioned, I doubt Wisconsin loses another home game this year. Same can be said for Kansas as well. You lost Iowa State at home. Obviously, you're still trying to go for your 13th title. West Virginia already beat you, and they beat you, respectively. I'd be surprised if West Virginia swept Kansas. Now, if they did, that'd be awesome just for the sake of, hey, maybe the run of Kansas will end where they win the Big 12, even though they'd still be in the neck of it this year. But I'll take Kansas. I don't like saying that out loud, and it kind of makes me feel sick. But I do think Kansas wins tonight, Chris. Yes.
So do I. Do you not want to talk? You don't like – this is going to be a tough one for you, Duke and Virginia. No, it won't be tough. But I know, you know, you don't necessarily speak highly of Virginia per se either. But, of course, when it's Duke, that's the number one top-of-the-line team to go with, you know, Kansas and then Kentucky and all that. But Duke travels to UVA, Virginia. Virginia coming off a very great game last night. Double overtime. It seemed like they were going to, you know, end it in before overtime. But, man, they just kept hitting crucial threes, Virginia Tech did. Do you think Duke, who is now playing a lot better, man, this would be a humongous win for him. But it basically comes down to this, Marshall. Big 12 in the ACC, I know we're a month out, but to me, the ACC and the Big 12 get decided this week.
Man,
Virginia still has to play North Carolina twice. But they're playing them once already later in the week. You know what I mean? So Duke, Virginia, and then North Carolina and Virginia. Those are tough games, man.
Yeah, you know, the last couple of years when Duke does play Virginia, it's normally always a pretty close game. I think that Duke kind of raises up their intensity a little bit because West Virginia is known as a defensive team. And I would say Duke normally doesn't have that MO of late. They're a little more offensive based, but for some reason, Duke plays Virginia better than we do. I'll say that. For Carolina, it's always like, ah, crap. We're playing a team that wants to run like a half court offense and wants to slow the game down. Like, they're lame. They suck. Now we got to play that game. Like, I don't want to do that. I think Duke has a little more of an easier transition to playing a team like Virginia compared to the Baby Blue that I support. But
that's a good point.
Maybe this will be the ultimate jinx. I'm gonna pick Duke to win just because I think they've been playing good basketball. And for the life of me, this is no joke at all. I don't know how Virginia's doing it this year because I still don't believe Perenthes is an incredible great ball player in regards to being able to score offensively. Because last year he was the main point guard, and this year whenever I watch him play, it's not like he can just like come down and bust a three. But he finds ways to win, and they're ranked basically in the top 10 the whole season. But
You know, he passes the ball well.
I guess I just haven't heard like anyone else really mention it for a name. Like last year it was like Brogdon, who's having a sick year in the NBA this year. But it's like who else on Virginia is like worth mentioning? Like, I talked about how I watched the Kansas game this year, and Frank Mason must have been mentioned like 35 times in like a half. This Virginia team, it's like when you see the box score, it's Perenthes, and that's it. It's like, well, who in God's name is helping him out there? I mean, it's got to be someone because they're ranked highly, and I know it's not all defense, so I don't know. But I'm going to pick Duke to win because I think that'll, in theory of reverse psychology, cost him to lose. So, yeah. We'll go with that
pretty
theory,
deep.
Chris, and see how it works out.
It's getting pretty deep, man.
I'm trying.
We're getting into psychology, man. You know what?
Texas has made me smarter.
The non-conference schedule, like if you saw it on average, you'd say, wow, they got a good-ass schedule. But the way it plays out on the court year in and year out, you know, Iowa, who's been pretty damn good lately, they're not as good. Providence, who's been pretty damn good lately, they're kind of rebuilding, although they got a big win on Sunday, or on Saturday, whatever. Yeah, it was Sunday. Saturday. Can't remember which. Saturday, I think. Ohio State, they're down. You know what I mean? They lost to West Virginia in a competitive game, but then they started hot with beating Louisville. Then they kind of went through a little, you know, back-to-back losses, Florida State and Pitt. And now they've kind of straightened it out against clubs they should beat. They barely lost to Nova, and we think Nova's a good club, right? Virginia Tech is scrappy,
yeah.
just shellackled them. I know I said shellackled three times now, but 71-48, they just dominated. They beat Louisville twice. Now, the second time, you know, was without their guy. So, he's back now, too. But I'm going to go Louisville at home, but I kind of feel like Duke. I like your point about they can play both styles, and they definitely recruit to both styles as well. Because some years, I'm not saying Duke is like Virginia where they can't score, or other teams, Louisville and some other teams, that UConn at times when they couldn't score, but yet they play good enough defense to advance and that type of thing. Man, Duke's been playing really good, but I got to be on the opposite anyway. It's a home game. Virginia, they're coming off a loss. I'll say Virginia wins the game. Virginia at North Carolina is a big game. Let's talk about that one, and then KU Baylor. I think Baylor will finally get that big W in conference they've been looking for, and I think Kakalaka will respond very well. Man, Virginia is just ending the season rough. They still got to play North Carolina again, too. What do you say about those two games? Because we've already talked. We already think Maryland's going to lose to Wisconsin anyway on Sunday. So, what's up with those two games? And then we'll wrap it up. You know, we'll talk a little Gophers too.
I'm just really not a believer in Maryland at all because Tremble's been inconsistent at some games, and they don't have the support or the skill level that I thought they had last year. But Maryland embarrassed me every time last year. I said they were super good, so screw them. Moving on.
Carolina,
dude, you don't burn bridges against me and get away with it. I'll fight back. For Carolina and Virginia, this is a game where we won the ACC conference tournament against them last year, and I remember being in Vegas at a sports bar about 10 deep and like cheering my butt off because it's always a tight game. It's going to be in like the mid-50s. We're going to have to play defense that we haven't played all year, and our guards are going to have to make shots because God knows they're not going to run up and down the court with us. It's just such a different change of style to where, okay, you know, we'll get to run a little bit, but then we're also going to have to clamp down on defense. Now, again, Carolina, I would say, is a little bit better offensively than the last couple of years, but our defense is worse. And the one reason it hurts against us, because Virginia, on offense, like I mentioned, they maybe don't have a star player, but with the way they run their offense, Chris, if you can't play defense, you're going to look kind of foolish. It'll be a simple, well, you know, we're going to run the shot clock down to 10 seconds, and, you know, after we run about 5 back screen cuts on the 6th one, you're not going to be able to guard us. That's the kind of thing that scares me of, you know, and Virginia's not going to be super flashy, but I've seen a lot of glimpses here from Carolina where a dude on the end of our court just isn't covered. And it's like, guys, you can't leave people open. Like, this is fundamental defense to where who's covering number 15? Like, no one is on him. And versus a team like Virginia, that's – Chris, they'll gladly dribble the ball until you got 5 seconds left on the shot clock to take a good shot. And then they know they have time to get back on defense. So this is kind of the kryptonite. I mean, obviously, playing Duke is always tough, but it's that rivalry game you get up for. After they're on the list of teams I kind of don't want to play, do want to play, it's Virginia next. Because no one plays more different than we do, and I think they're really going to expose our defense this year. Last year, Carolina had some gamers. This year, we got guys that can score the ball, but we haven't played lockdown defense yet. That chapter has not been written for my team. And I will pick Carolina
to
win.
You might be running out of paper. Maybe they used up all the paper on those African-American classes. You know what I mean? Those fake-ass classes.
Wow. I feel the knife in, like, in between my ribs on the right side of my body, and it just got twisted.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah. Well, with that being said, I picked Carolina. I'm going to go to the doctors and try to bandage up that dagger that just got sunk into me by one of my best friends. But, hey, that was served up on a platter, and you delivered it, sir. That was good.
I sure did.
I'll give you credit, buddy. That was a Vince Carter alley-oop dunk I saw back in the day in 1998 when he
I kept the arm in the net. It's still in the net. I'm hanging from it, basically.
I mean, that was vintage Vince Carter when I saw him in 1998, my first ever time I saw Tar Heels live. Him and my favorite guy of all time, Ed Cota. That was the Ed Cota to Vince Carter, like, windmill slam dunk, and Vince Carter was, like, half his body was above the rim, spike into the ribs. And with that said, I'm done. I'm going to take a little break here and let you talk for a second so I can try to recover from that.
I'm going to have to
ice
my arm,
dude. Who do you like?
I'm going to have to ice my arm because it hurts from that rim, dude. It sucks holding your whole body weight from the rim. I never did that, and it hurts, man. I just realized that. Anyway, I think Kakalaka will get it together. It'll be a fun game, but I think they'll get it together. And you're right, Virginia, you know, they're a low-scoring team. They need that dude to do everything on the court, rebounds, assists.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to set up everybody. And, oh, by the way, score. You know, you could look at their point totals and go, they got a guy that averages like 13. They got a guy that averages 11 and 10. But, you know, once you go a little further than that and you realize their average scoring, you know, the one thing is, I will say this, and this has kind of been under that coach, that they shoot the ball at a high percentage, though. They don't take
a bunch
of dumb shots. You know what I mean? They don't take a bunch of dumb shots. So that to me, that they kind of – I'm not going to call them Wisconsin, but they have that feel where you're going, yeah, dude, I know this guy only averages 9 points, but he could blow up for 18 and be crucial in the second half, you know, that type of thing. Now, they don't have that top of the line, you know, that talent per se. It's just one of those things you can look at a line sometimes in the last decade of Wisconsin and go, huh, yeah, I'm not really impressed with that. But in the end, it turns out. But with that said, I do think North Carolina will get the W at home. I also think Baylor will definitely – or not definitely, but I like them at home. I think they'll get the win at home. I feel like it's – that time has come for them to get a nice road – or just I should say a nice road win, a nice win in general, because that's been a little bit of it's been a little bit of issue for them. So I got them winning. We both agree that Wisconsin will beat Maryland. You said some nice things about Maryland. Screw them now because they didn't perform. My Gophers.
Amen.
You know, last week we talked about finally they got off the schneid. Well, now they beat Iowa in a really fun double overtime game, 101 to like 89. They took over in the second overtime, clearly, definitely took over. We had a return of Murphy. Murphy really is starting to look good. He's a sophomore. He was a All-American, or not All-American, but a freshman, All-Big Ten, had a good freshman year. You know, they add a lot of pieces this year, and it's all kind of, you know, trying to get together and join together. But he has kind of been, I'm not going to say the odd man out, but he hasn't as looked as good considering that freshman to sophomore year jump. So Coffey has been big. And, you know, even though, once again, he fouled out. However, Marshall, before Lynch fouled out, he had 12 boards and 6 blocks. So he definitely at least, and I'll say 2 of the fouls were on some bullshit, but that's basketball. Usually I'm happy with just one of them being bad, but there was 2 of them that weren't that good. But now... Anyway, long story short, the Gophers, 18 wins, 6-6 in conference. I can't. It's been a couple of years now, so actually Tubby's last year, since we are even 500 this late in the conference play. You know, we're entering our 13th game this Wednesday. We have 4 games out of the last 6 at home. We got to play at Maryland and at Wisconsin, which isn't fun, especially with Wisconsin already being beat. So that's not going to happen. Maybe they can sneak one at Maryland, but man, if the Gophers go 3-3 down the stretch, you know, with their quality RPI and their strength of schedule is like ranked 14th in the country, it's not going to get any weaker because, like I said, we have some big games coming up. And then, you know, if we could just win one game in the conference. And lose one, you know, that lines up to about 22 wins. And when you got 22 wins, you got a decent strength of schedule. That tells me you're right around a eighth or ninth seed, or maybe even seventh that they were to get a road win or whatever. I remember you saying, do you still think the Gophers, this was a couple weeks ago when they were right in the middle of that losing streak, and I still had some faith that they could, they just had to stop the bleeding. Last week it was all, or 2 weeks ago, it was all about stopping the bleeding on the show. Well, now they've won three in a row. So they're streaking upward. They need to get the W this Wednesday. They play Indiana and Michigan. That's the next two games for this week. So the Gophers are looking positive. And also the recruiting is still looking positive. So if the Gophers can get into that tourney, I think they will have turned the tide upwards in the program. If you look at the recruiting and then getting back to the tournament, that would be phenomenal. So there's my Gopher segment. Things are positive.
Let me ask you.
Both in the temperature, because, man, it was like 47 today, Marshall. This is crazy. But in raining. I mean, it's rained like seven times this goddamn winter. It's crazy. Anyway, the Gophers are on the up and up. What else you got for me before we get the hell out of here?
Let me ask you like a video game cheat code question, Chris, for your Gophers, okay? Follow me here. Would you give up 6 points, like to start the game down 6-0, if that gave your boy Lynch like an extra foul to spare in the game, or per se, let him get 7 fouls but start the game down like 10-0? Would that be a fair trade you'd make if you could like punch in that code of, okay, we're down 10-0, but our boy has 7 fouls, let's go and play.
10-0? No, I wouldn't go 10-0. That's a little extreme.
Okay, what about 1 foul
six
for
nothing,
6-0?
I would go 6-0. I would go 6-0. If you give me 6-0 and we get to play in the 80s for those couple of years that the Big East went to 6 fouls, that's what I'll go with.
Yeah.
Can I get that? If I can get that, then we're talking. Now we're talking.
All right,
get that, I'll talk with that. Yeah, because this Lynch, man, he's a difference maker, and I just can't wait until he finds out how to play games in the Big Ten. You know what I mean? He's got to realize that we're not in the 80s and 90s anymore. And I'll tell you what, for all the bitching that we've done sometimes about, you know, calls and the way they call it or whatever, this impeding progress, like we said, the you know, what they did in the NBA several years ago and how it's turned the game around minorly, or it hasn't in some ways. Sometimes it's a little too soft and nitpicky. You don't find that in the, you know, you don't find that as much, you know, in college. But I'll tell you what, I've noticed scoring, well, I mean, the fact is scoring's on the way up. And it is starting to now, I'm starting to see it more. I'm starting to see a little bit cleaner of a game, but still rough enough for me as an old school basketball, you know, fan. So I forgot to mention that. That impeding the progress and getting in the path clearly, like, you know, with grabbing a shoulder or putting a finger on a shoulder, or, you know, that minor stuff that makes a big difference. And it used to in basketball. Now you can't do it as much. I think that's actually I'm seeing a change, and I think it's positive for college basketball. I wanted to mention that last week, or 2 weeks ago, or something like that. But I just wanted to say that before we get out of here. What do you got?
Oh, okay. I'm just the fact that we can count down. It's 24 days until Selection Sunday. That just makes me excited, brother. I mean, obviously for Carolina, we're neck and neck with about four teams trying to win the ACC. on a side note, and not to get too political on the show, but this isn't really voicing an opinion, just stating a fact. If that House bill of, you know, the LGBT and all that stuff of, you know, different people's rights doesn't pass, Carolina won't be able to host a conference tournament or a postseason game for 5 years. So just speaking strictly from a Carolina basketball fan standpoint, while also respecting people's rights, it's like, and I hope that stuff gets squared away, because, like, just being to tie this back and forth with political rights and people's rights and basketball fan, like, I love watching the ACC tournament played in Greensboro. Like, since I've been a little kid, like, I've always watched Carolina fans, like, it'll be like the opening day of the tournament, and you'll see, like, your pod of Duke fans and Carolina fans, and it's like, well, Carolina fans are here early because Duke's playing now, and then Wake Forest, NC State. And it's like that tournament's always been played in North Carolina. And to me, that's where it's meant to be. And it kind of, you know, seems kind of sentimental in my heart, but I've been watching this for my whole life. And if they can't come to an agreement on this current bill going on in life that does matter to many of people, they won't be able to host tournament games in conferences or in March Madness at all for 5 years. So, again, normally one thing Carolina and Duke get the privilege of is playing in Greensboro or, you know, some city in North Carolina when they start off March Madness tournament. But they're not allowed to do that at all. Now, I'm not saying, you know, I don't have a stance on the bill. I believe everyone should be treated respectfully and fairly. But it's kind of weird. I saw that story because when I saw that the ACC tournament this year is hosted in the Barclays, I'm like, well, why in God's name is the ACC tournament being played in Brooklyn? I mean, there's not a freaking team in Brooklyn.
Well, that was already
like
a plan, though. That was a plan to get the East Coast involved. That was already a plan. That was in the plan.
Yeah, it was, and it kind of rubs me the wrong way. But I get, you know, it's money, and it's a big city, and it's our new arena. But that might be
the Big East fell apart now, so there's really no big hype for it as much as there used to be. Why not take advantage of the – you realize New York City is the biggest media capital in the world, you know?
It you're right, and it is. It's just, it's like, you know, it's like, okay, well, I want to see it, you know, downplayed, like, you know, kind of near where the most teams are. But nonetheless, again, not trying to get on political stance, just something that it'd be kind of weird if you cannot see an ACC tournament played in the state of North Carolina for the next 5 years because they can't get certain stuff squared away. So, overall, aside from all that kind of little take there, I'm just excited because we're getting close to the point.
I don't feel that bad because you did not show the proper feelings about the Big East dying in that conference title or that conference, the conference championship, the tournament, basically what we're talking about, tournaments, right?
Yeah.
And you, until last year, you finally admitted, you know what? You know what? I've been wrong. I do miss that tournament. There is something different there. And I couldn't get you to side with that. So I don't care that Duke in North Carolina. I could give two shits that Duke in North Carolina don't get home court advantage for years. I mean, come on. How many times do you got to play the damn thing for Duke in North Carolina? And, you know, it'll be the same people, and I'm not talking to you about this. I'm talking about this bill. The same people that'll say freedom, 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 America number one. We got all our freedoms, but yet they want to take freedoms away. So, you know, it is what it is. It started with the NBA, you know, and we saw it, the WNBA. Obviously, they're representative, you know, of that as well. And, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes, you know, you gotta change with the times, and that's on them.
True.
But I'll say this, Duke and North Carolina, it was already, like I mentioned, it was already planned. It was already planned to go to Barclays because of Syracuse, Pittsburgh, you know, that Upper East. You know what I mean? So that was already in the works. That was a deal.
Screw them, Chris.
But I'll say this.
Screw them.
Screw them. Screw that city then. Because North Carolina and Duke, oh, my God, they don't get home field advantage. Oh, my God, home court for one freaking time in the last 35 freaking years. Oh, well, that's too bad for both. Why don't they just keep going back and forth on Tobacco Road and just, you know, open up a gym there and they can play, since it's their tournament, they can play together and see who wins their little baby tournament.
Man, now I got a knife stuck in my left side of my ribs, too. I might need to take tomorrow off. I've been I have punctured lungs with internal bleeding. This show needs to come to an end. So
yeah, but in Texas,
recover.
You can't get Obamacare because they won't do the federal spending. They'll take it, so you're screwed there, too. No, I'm just kidding. let's get out of here. Let's get out of here. You got things to do. You got things to do. I just looked at
all
the
right,
time.
Yeah, I gotta get to work because, God, my kids say it drove me nuts, but, oh, well, so be it. That's part of being a teacher and a coach. Yes, Chris and I will be back next week. We're getting by next week. We'll be under 20 days for Selection Sunday, which is just badass. That means the time has come for us to truly enjoy basketball. Me to do a show in a different city. Hopefully this year with good reception, not hotel construction. God knows I've been getting hosed on that the last couple of years. But anyways, I'll fight through to Orlando, try to find somewhere nice, and again, time to cheer on your teams. As you mentioned, if you're a Big Ten team, I guess you got to do something to get some darn respect. But anyways, lastly, to finish off the show completely, I always like to say I hope all the family and friends stay healthy if anyone listens to the show. I did see on the bottom line ticker that Bill Snyder, the Kansas State long-term college football coach, it just said he is diagnosed with throat cancer. But it says the projections are for him to beat it. He says the projections are positive, and he's already been going through the healing of it. Last year on football, 2 years ago on our football show, we had a lot of very sad, tragic news in regards to health. And this is something that hopefully does go away because for all we know, he's probably one of the best, nicest, best coaches ever for the sport of college football. So I hope a speedy recovery for Bill Snyder because that guy's one of the best genuine people around. So we'll finish on that very positive note. Take care. Have a good week. Chris and I'll be back. Peace.